Excuses.
Here I am. So...
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Profit First live session. Hi, Tom. You are the only live attendee at the moment. Can you hear and see me? If you can just pop a message in the chat, Tom, just so I can know if you can hear and see me, okay? Okay, so just for... Yeah, perfect. I'm just going to see if I can give you access to your mic.
Hello.
Oh, there you go.
Cool. No, yeah, I figured it out in the end.
Yeah, perfect. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, so, thanks for joining. So this is, it's the first time we've done the live Profit First session, and it's really meant to be a kind of drop-in session, essentially. So we are going to be running more structured workshops, content, which is actually going live in 26, but this is pretty much drop-in, ask me anything you want to do with Profit First. It's being, the only thing to note, just let somebody else join, it's being recorded, so... Just, okay. Bear in mind, you know, how much personal information, I guess, you're comfortable with sharing. Just welcome Gary. Hi, Gary.
Sorry, I'm driving, unfortunately.
That's okay.
I'm listening to you while I drive, and I'll be home in 10 minutes and then join the call properly.
Yeah, no problem at all. I think that looks like a Tesla from what I can see with that screen. Yeah, okay. Very tax efficient, Teslas.
Yes, tax efficient, but they drop like a stone. I'm about 20 grand in the hole on this one when I have to give it back.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So,
that's not good.
Lots of losses for you to write off.
It's a good point, actually, to be fair, because everyone thinks about the tax side of buying something, but we've got to think of the practicalities and the actual cost of running or buying something as well.
Well, definitely the way to go. Now, when I did it, my previous accountant said, do it as a PCP, because then we could write off the whole car, which he was quite right. We wrote off the whole car. But the problem was I paid £61,000 for the car. And it's by the time I give it back, it's going to be worth about £15,000. And I'm going to owe probably £23,000. So, it's not great.
Yeah, you got to do what's right for you. We could probably do a whole session on vehicles, to be honest. But I was just saying to Tom, who's live with us, because this has gone out to the whole client base, and you two have joined live, but it's being recorded, and it's supposed to be a drop-in session, Q&A, ask me anything you want. And I'll probably come back to your question in about 10 minutes, Gary, because I know you submitted some questions before the session, because obviously you're driving, and it might be a little bit easier to come back to you. But thanks for sharing those, and we can definitely tick those off. The only thing to note is this is being recorded, so we just need to be a bit careful how much information we obviously want to share, because it's going to be accessed to other people. But it's completely up to you guys how much you share. You can be talking general terms if you want. It's completely up to you when it comes to numbers. So Tom, obviously you've joined today. Do you just for everyone who might be watching this back and people in the room, do you want to give us a little bit of context with your business, if that's okay?
It's a fairly new business, heating and plumbing, just on my own at the moment. I think I set up with you guys back in August. I'm quite new to the whole Profit First approach, and I just wanted to sort of make sure I was doing it properly with my allocating into my pots and things like that. Just want to make sure I'm not making any sort of big mistakes. I'm not having nasty surprises when it comes to January.
that makes sense. Yeah, I think when we talk about nasty surprises, the number, I mean, Profit First is all about ultimately, paying ourselves more as the owner in the business. And I don't, there should be nothing greedy or selfish about that, because even if we've got a team, if there's more profit in the business, when we grow the business, there's more money for everyone, essentially. So that's the priority. But at the end of the day, when most people get into Profit First, the initial focus is making sure they got money to pay their tax. They got money to pay their VAT. So that's all perfectly valid. And it's what we focus on, actually, when we help people, to make sure no surprises, as you say, when it comes to January and VAT bills. Are you currently VAT registered, Tom?
Not yet, no. I'm creeping closer and closer.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Okay, so and just for context, have you already read the book?
Yeah, I listened to the audiobook. Last time I listened to it was probably back in April, so I need to listen to it again, really.
Yeah, and how did you find it? Because I often find, in my experience and also speaking to other people, is it's almost a book of two halves. The first half is quite exciting and, you know, it hits us like, oh, that makes so much sense. I need to do this. We get to the second half of the book and it can get a little bit nitty gritty and a bit too much information for some people.
Yeah, I did find the same, I think. Almost a bit repetitive by the second half, so I was switching off a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's a really good point. And actually, I'll just touch on that before we dive into for your circumstances. Is it, you know, books in general, to be honest, can sometimes be repetitive. There's a lot of stats out there to say that 80% of people don't get beyond this page 60 when they read a book. And the truth is, a lot of books, unless they're really, really special, substantial books, kind of have a really big point, a big philosophy, you know, a big idea, and they hammer it home, essentially. And Profit First is not much different. I guess, you know, in many ways, the book is selling us to be emotionally invested, to kind of understand why we should operate Profit First in our business. However, we work with lots of people one-on-one with Profit First, and we have been doing so for quite a few years. And there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of kind of extra magic, kind of more advanced strategies that can come later on with Profit First. But it's all about starting on the basics, really. And even Mike himself, he says when people are a little bit overwhelmed, they don't know where to start. Because some people get the whole paralysis with analysis thing where they, you know, there's just they don't know where to start. There's just too much going on. So I guess my first question for you would be, have you kind of got started in any way, or what does it look like your setup with from a Profit First perspective at the moment?
Yeah, I'm very much sort of in the basic stage, I guess. I haven't quite got into the nitty gritty stuff. So I've got my main business account, which my money comes into and goes out of, but then when I do my monthly accounts, I send that to a metal account, which is like it's got individual pots that I've set up for tax, OPEX, obviously profit, and it chops it up into predetermined percentages for me.
I see.
So that is the extent to which I've got. The percentages I've based off the book, basically. Yeah. I've tweaked a few of them just here and there, fine-tuned it, but so far so good.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's interesting. And you're doing what a lot of people kind of do, actually, when they sort of dive in with Profit First, is they, you know, they use the percentages in the book. And that's quite impressive if you manage to stick with it, because for most people, because you're obviously fairly new. How long have you been going for now, Tom?
Officially since August.
Okay. So has there been any, before I go leading on to what I was going to say, has there been any challenges trying to stick to those percentages?
Not yet, no. I came from a partnership before and I learned, and we were doing the Profit First model there, but my business partner was in charge of the accounts, so I didn't get too involved. What I did learn from the previous business, I've sort of implemented in the new one, and yeah, I've not had too much trouble yet.
Yeah, yeah, I remember when we first chatted, because I think you were listening to the podcast, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite impressive, firstly, because a lot of people that dive straight into the, and I know Gary, we'll come back to it in a bit, Gary got some questions around his own percentages and taps and how to benchmark it. But for a lot of people diving into the percentages in the book, it can be, for many people, too much too soon. So I was going to say, if you did have any challenges, don't feel bad, because for a lot of businesses, they're generally quite ambitious. However, it might be that for your style business, because obviously you're a service-based business, and I imagine you're mainly labor-driven, are you, in terms of your income?
In terms of sales, like the biggest, it's about 50-50, I'd say, materials.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, it just happens that it's worked out fine in your situation. So what we normally, firstly, if it's working and it's not broken, you don't want to fix it. You know, cliches are cliches for a reason. So I wouldn't try and completely scrap what you're doing. If it's kind of working, I would stick with it. But Gary's actually the first person who's going through our 9-step Profit First program, and we're about to we're going to formalize it and structure it a little bit better in 26. And I can share that with you, Tom, where it will help you go through from the beginning how to create your benchmarks and your percentages. Yes. So it's in a very structured format, literally, you know, 9 steps and lots of tools and templates. And that might help you fine tune your numbers. But I'm always reluctant to do too many changes if something's working. So if you know, something's working in your business, then that's fine. And I think our business in general, if it's working, do more of it. If it's not working, we need to try something different.
I think Stephen.
Yeah. Hi, Gary.
I have started going through your blueprint, as you said, and I think one of the problems Tom is going to have is to complete the first couple of spreadsheets, P&L, and if he's only just started trading, he's not going to have a previous year's P&L yet, is he?
Great feedback, actually. So that's why we've got Gary and there'll be some other people testing it. That's really good feedback. So I think in your situation, Tom, it's trying to, it comes back to a business plan. And a lot of people have the wrong, and we're about to do a workshop. And if you're wondering, Gary, when's that going to be? I'm about to announce this week, early December, we're doing a business plan workshop, actually. And you're free, Tom, if you want to join that. But essentially, a business plan can sometimes get a bad rep because we think of banks, we think of lending, we think of new businesses, you know, 15 pages, we create it and it sits in the drawer. However, fundamentally, a business plan is kind of, you know, if you think of sports, you think of football, what's the strategy before the game happens? We need a little bit of a plan. And a big part of that is the numbers side of your business plan. And you've probably modeled this out roughly already. I know there's always uncertainty with a new business, but what you would do is do your best kind of guesstimate of what you expect a 12-month period to look like. And because you've been going for all, since August, you could kind of extrapolate that, Tom, if that makes sense, because you've got some real data to spread it out to 12 months.
Yeah.
And then that would give you, when you go through the 9 steps, and you don't necessarily need to go through the whole 9 steps, but I think particularly the first few steps will help you, because it's a journey, but the first few steps will help you lock in your percentages. What would you say has been any of the biggest challenges with you doing Profit First in your business?
I think nothing stands out really yet. It's just the uncertainty of come January, whether I've set my percentages correctly, like you say, because I've got nothing to go off.
Yeah.
No previous. I've got corporate, I'm limited, so I'm going to have the whole corporation tax and all that interesting stuff. The uncertainty of what happens in January, just to confirm that I'm doing everything correctly. So,
yeah. And to be honest, I mean, how many years, Gary, have you been in business now for?
10.
So we some of it is kind of we learn as we go along to some extent. And I know that doesn't sound very scientific, but we can kind of bombard people. Firstly, you're ahead of the game because you're setting money aside. You're starting Profit First, you're a new business. There's a lot of people that come into Profit First 5 years down the line, you know, so many years down the line. And they're learning from a lot of pain and a lot of kind of failures and mistakes. And that's part of the, you know, the entrance fee really in business. And I know you've had a previous business, Tom, so I'm sure you've had your own kind of learnings. But when you've been going for a year or two, you get into a little bit more of a rhythm, particularly because I guess you're new. Are you new to having a limited company? Was it a partnership previously?
Yeah, it was a sort of creative partnership before, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got a friend who we do his accounts for, and he's a limited company. We've been doing it for 5 years, and the penny's only just dropped with certain things when it comes to being a limited company. And I'm not saying that's, you know, what we should aim for, but there's an element of you'll fall into a nice rhythm and you'll get an idea, but you're putting money aside, so you're kind of ahead of the game. And if you're using the benchmarks, so I'm guessing, is it around 15% tax?
I think I'm doing about 19 at the moment, so hopefully that sounds good.
Yeah.
I've got my rainy day fund pot as well, which I've
okay,
not...
Okay, brilliant.
I mean, in my head, I've just got... That's my contingency if it all does go pear-shaped.
Yeah, brilliant. And, you know, there's an expression they use in the guys in America So there's two people who run Profit First globally. There's Mike Michalowicz, the author of the book, and there's Ron, and that's his business partner. One of his expressions is, if in doubt, open an account. So we can never have too many kind of pots and accounts. So that, but that rainy day fund is a big one, really. It just gives you that peace of mind. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, is there anything you specifically want to pick my brains on from a Profit First context? Anything else?
No, to be honest, I was hoping to just sort of listen in and pick up what I could. Yeah, if I'm honest, I haven't got anything juicy to give you.
Yeah, no, that's completely fine. And what I'm going to do, because this is the first time we've gone live, is although it's meant to be fairly unstructured, I'm going to come with an agenda just in case, you know, people haven't got questions, and I can run through and do a little bit of an educational style session. So that's all good. No, thanks for sharing, Tom. I can see Gary's just settling at his desk. So that looks like good timing.
Yep. I'll be with you in 1 second. Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm just going to read out your questions, Gary, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Give context for Tom and anyone else who ends up listening to this. I'm just going to load them up. So Tom is wondering about benchmarking his TAPS, so his target allocated percentages, against companies in a similar industry. So he's just wondering, how does that fit into Profit First? And also how to kind of tweak your TAPS or to set your TAPS if there's a seasonality in your business. So for example, I'll be buying my Christmas tree pretty soon. We jump on the Christmas bandwagon quite early in my house, and the guys in the local forestry, they only sell Christmas trees in December. So if that was their whole business, then they need to do something to align with, you know, that seasonality in the business. So if you're ready, Gary, can you just add a little bit of context with what you do? And you've already shared how long you've been going for.
So we sell promotional merchandise. So it is it's not seasonal, but it is up and down. There's no rhyme or reason to it, especially when it comes to invoicing and money coming in. I've been doing Profit First for, I think I'm in my fourth year now. And, you know, I think it's the best thing ever. It's the reason I chose you guys when I was looking for a new accountant, because I wanted an accountant that understood Profit First and my previous accountant didn't agree with it. But it's what I tell every single person I know in my network when they start a business, is you've got to do Profit First. It's really, really helped me a lot. What I will say is, I read the book and the audiobook right in the beginning, and I kind of tweaked it to make it work for me. And then as I've moved forward, I've continually tweaked it, but going back in the direction of where it was supposed to be. But I still have a few tweaks in there that I think are quite... I think you have to look at your industry, and I think every industry is different, and I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all solution. So I think you have to find ways to work it for you. So, for example, in my case, I started off with a lot more accounts than I really needed, and then I slowly sort of whittled them down a little bit. And then especially since the way that I did it. So my spreadsheet that I created for myself originally had... Actually, I've got it here in front of me, 1 second. Originally had income, profit, owner's comp, operating expenses, suppliers, marketing, salaries, emergency fund, tax VAT, and tax corp.
Yeah.
And then I realized, well, to Richard, so I use NatWest, and NatWest is pretty good because you can have sub-accounts. The problem, and unlimited sub-accounts, the problem with the sub-accounts with NatWest is you can't actually pay money out of them. So you have to, every time you want to do anything with those accounts, you have to move it back into operating expenses and send them out again, which it's a double step, okay. It's not the end of the world. And I've got into a system where I've built my spreadsheet. I put in the one figure. It tells me all the allocations. I transfer everything across to all the relevant accounts. Then I record everything. So I like to record things so I can see, so I can track. So then I record. So I then have another column. Let's say today was Profit First Day. I would then put all the balances in so I can see my overall wealth, if you will. And I have other things like there. I have my retirement fund and my crypto account and all of that. Yeah. So I can see my total net worth in a sense, and I can track it. But my idea was to set up, because I never really got the the whole concept of the direct expenses, above the line expenses.
Yeah.
So I just treated income as above the line and everything else below the line. And what I would do is I would have it done, and I knew how much money I wanted to take out every month, and I knew how much money I needed for salaries. So I had a formula in there that would say income was 100 grand, God willing, 100 grand, just to keep the math simple. It would take out enough of a percentage of that to, let's say the salaries were 5 grand a month. It would split that into two. So it would say take off 2.5 grand for salary, take off whatever for the director's thing, and then the rest of it is what's left for income that could then go through the taps.
Yeah.
I've since switched it around when Richard advised me to your way, which is I've got income less my VAT, less my cost of goods sold.
Yeah.
And then the rest is, and I must admit, I've had a bit of an adjustment period to that, because for the first, because our money is so irregular, we can have 10 grand 1 week, 20 grand the next, nothing the following. You end up in a situation where I don't always know how much money I'm going to make, or getting to the end of the month and I actually haven't got enough money to pay salaries, because this month we haven't invoiced a lot, and but next month we might be invoicing a lot. Some of my clients on 60 days, some of my clients on... sorry, I've got a WhatsApp call coming through. Okay, cool. Sorry. Yeah, so that, but I'm kind of sort of working my way along. But what I did was, and also because I like to take out a regular amount per month rather than different amounts. So what I've done is I've got a sub account for owner's comp. And if I've got more allocation than I actually need, I leave it in the owner's comp one. So for when I have weeks when I don't have enough, I've got, and the same thing for salaries.
Yeah.
But then so obviously now I've had to readjust all my taps, because I think I'd put my taps right, because I was tracking it every week and adjusting. And I think I had it pretty right. And now all of a sudden that I'm losing, obviously, the VAT and the cost of goods sold before the money then gets divided up. Now I'm adjusting those taps. So at the moment, I can't quite work out how much I need to have for owner's comp, and how much the split between owner's comp and operating expenses seems to be a different one. Because some weeks it's that way around and some weeks it's that way around.
Yeah, so it does link into a little bit with, you know, what Tom was saying, that it's an interesting one, because to a large extent, Gary, it was obviously working. You've been doing it for a few years, you're getting traction, you're building the habit, and it's obviously working. So as you said, it's kind of a readjustment, really. And I think it's going to take you a little bit of time, probably, just to tweak it and refine it and to grow into our suggestion. As a percentage, what would you say, you know, if you've got 100K, how much of that would typically be cost of goods sold in terms of direct costs?
So if I go back over, let me just open and hide all these columns. So Richard switched me over to your system on the 10th of October. So I haven't got a lot of history on that one. But I started off with owner's comp on 20% and operating expenses at 67.
Yeah.
Because the idea was that I wanted to, all my suppliers are on 30 days, most of my suppliers are on 30 days, some of them are pro forma, but the majority are 30 days, and the majority of my clients are 30 days, but some of them are 60 days. So you can end up in a situation where I'm doing an order for a client where I'm on pro forma with my supplier and they on 60 days with me. So effectively I could have 80 days between 80, 90 days between me laying out the money and so I wanted to build up a little bit of operating expenses. So I started it off on 67% in 20, is what I said. Yeah. And then I've slowly, as I built money up in my operating expenses pot, I reduced that. But then I realized that I was going the wrong direction, because a lot of my operating expenses is actually the cost of goods sold. So now that's above the line, I've started reducing that. So my operating expenses now, as we speak, so for Friday's profit first coming up, it's going to be 5% profit, 35% owner's comp, 57% operating expenses, 2% emergency fund, and 1% corporation tax.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, and to be honest, there's not enough in the book about what happens before we get to real revenue. So in the language of profit first, it's after the direct expenses. And there's a little bit of nuance to that. But when we take off those direct expenses, as long as direct expenses and subcontractors, irregular subcontractors, is more than 10% of our revenue, then we want to treat it as a separate thing. And then we take that off, we take the VAT off, and what's left is really 100% of the pie from a profit first perspective. And we call that real revenue, you know, just to reinforce that. But there's not enough in the book. Mike doesn't talk enough about how do we figure that out? Because it gets quite complicated. I've worked with, you know, lots of different industries, and there's one where actually some similarities to yours, Gary. They're more, even more ad hoc, I imagine, in terms of the rhythm of their income. But they could literally have no revenue for 2 months, and then 80 grand can just hit their account. And I guess a big order comes in or something, you know. Or
exactly, yeah. So it's the same with us. You know, I've got, at the moment, I'm sort of occasionally having to borrow from one of my other pots. It's just because we're doing a big job at the moment with a client who is on 60 days. And we happen to be working with suppliers where we are having to pay up front. So yes, by the end of January, I'm flush. My profit first on the 25th of January is going to be a fun one, because I'm going to have plenty of money to distribute and go crazy with. But coming up to then, December, I mean, my one on Friday, I've got a situation where I don't know if I have got enough money in my pots to pay my bills. And that's not because my business isn't being run properly. Yeah. It's just because of the nature of the beast. But I think what will happen is, once I get the big one again in January, then I can allocate to build it. I'll be able to put enough into my pots that then they will cover me through the lean months, which is where I was before. So I've still got a lot of money in my accounts, my overall account. So it's not just. It's just at the moment I'm having to do a loan, borrow something from my VAT account, or borrow something from my proper person, just to. Knowing that I can then do it right. But I think that'll all settle down. It was pretty good, and I wasn't having to do that ever. Where I have the emergency fund, the 2% emergency fund, that's the only one I ever borrow from when I need to borrow from. And that'll build up to a couple of grand, and then I'll maybe have to borrow some to do something 1 month, and then I always put it back. But that's always been my borrowing fund.
Yeah.
When I needed it.
How often are you doing your profit first? Is it monthly or bi-weekly?
I do it every second Friday.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because I know you're supposed to do it on the 10th and the 25th, but quite often that's either on a weekend, but also Friday's my quiet day. It's the day when I like to do accounts and stuff. Well, I never like to do accounts.
We do Fridays in my business.
So it works quite well. Every second Friday seems to work for me. My assistant knows that I block off Friday until 11 o'clock in the morning. And it doesn't take me that long, actually. It normally takes me, depending obviously how many invoices I have to pay, but it usually takes me 2 to 3 hours to go through, allocate all the money, move it in, pay all my invoices, and then...
Do you enjoy doing it, Gary?
I enjoy it on days when I go into my income account and there's lots to work with. I don't enjoy it on the days when I'm, what invoices can I pay, which ones can't. Yeah, I do. In all honesty, I really do, because what it is I have my current, my wealth, as I call it, my retirement fund, where I've got all my accounts, and then I've got a total for those, and then I've got a table underneath there which has got my current account, my crypto account, my ISAs, and my pension, and I update those as well. And it's really interesting to see, because even though obviously on months when VAT goes out, it's always looking a little bit miserable, but it's interesting to see, as you can see the trend in the direction it's going. And when, you know, hopefully sometimes on the months when we've paid out a lot of money, I happen to have done quite well that month on crypto, or my pension has gone up, and that sort of balances it out a little bit. But you can see it going in the right direction. So yeah, I always feel a little bit better when I see it, because I can see a snapshot of where my business, I think it's the most accurate snapshot of where my business is, or where I am personally financially. I do kind of enjoy it, unless it's bad news, of course. But it's usually, like, it's easy to think, Jesus, we've got a lot of money going out. But when you look at it there, it doesn't seem so bad. And it balances out. So, yeah, but I think every second Friday, knock off a couple of hours. And yeah. I mean, obviously, I have invoices to pay, which Tom might not have.
Yeah, and we always say, do you know what? I've worked with someone where we were doing the allocations daily, which might seem crazy to a lot of people, but it worked for him and it worked for his business. And going back into how to tweak it for your business and your industry, I always say that 80% of it is the fundamentals of Profit First. 20% of it is fine-tuning it, tailoring it to you and your business and your industry. And that we can only get to that place with experience of doing our allocations. And I do think you're going in the right path by separating the direct costs, but I just think it's obviously going to be a little bit of disruption for you, isn't it? Because you're used to, you got into a habit, essentially.
True. Split your direct costs and your operation. Because yeah. The way I look at it is operating expenses are ones that I can adjust and I can yeah. I can do something with. Direct costs are direct costs. You know, they are what they are. I can't do anything about those. So it makes sense to keep them up there. So yeah, I'm kind of happy. I think it's a better system. Now I'm at, you were talking earlier on about the latter half of the book that no one reads. I did read it and I got a lot out of that because I'm now at this stage, I can't remember which chapter it is, but where you go through your list of operating expenses and you try and reduce it by 1% at a time overall. And I'm doing that now, going through it, like I can get rid of that subscription, I can get rid of that. So I am trying to bring down my operating expenses with the aim of every time I bring my operating expenses down by 1%, I add another 1% onto profit. And my profit all goes to my pension. So as long as if I can max out my pension every year, then it means I don't have to pay a hell of a lot of tax, which means I can reduce that part, which is why I've got that one right down. So it's, it kind of works for me from that point of view. I mean, that bit I've tweaked, I suppose, which is, I know you're supposed to draw the money out every quarter and go and spend it. But for me, I build that up all through the year. And at the end of the year, I pump it all into my pension account.
Well, I think actually there's a few things that link here. So, you took the words out of my mouth earlier when you said when you have the nice kind of periods, you can start building a buffer. And that's the ideal way of handling a little bit of seasonality in our business. And even without Profit First, you've probably heard people say in an ideal world, we can get to the point where we've got a month's worth of funds to cover operating expenses at any given point. And actually with Profit First, with the profit part, ideally we put 50% of it towards building a buffer long term, depending on what people's plan is, where we've got this kind of war chest of funds, this rainy day account, if we need it. However we go about it, whether you build up your owner's pay pot, your profit pot, your tax pot, it's just trying to get to the point where, like you said, it's working, there's no problems. But in a nice ideal world, we'd all have this nice kind of reserve in the pot to draw down. And you mentioned earlier, Gary, that, you know, you like a fixed amount to pay yourself. And that's probably quite common with a lot of people because they want to take out a usual kind of wage, for want of a better word. And what some people do is they take that fixed amount in, and as you mentioned, just leave the rest in the pot. You know, if there's a nice little buffer. And I've got someone I work with, he enjoys seeing his owner's pay build up. He enjoys the fact he can look at his owner's pay pot and say, if business, you know, took a downturn, I've got that nice pot of money just sat there waiting for me. So to be honest, I think you're heading in the right direction, Gary. I think if you change, you probably don't need to change too much. I would just make these small tweaks and changes with everything you're doing. But to go back to your question of seasonality, ideally, if we can build up that pot over time, that's really the ideal situation. If you've just got buffers in your pot, you've got a buffer in the owner's pay pot, you've got a buffer or a secondary operating expenses pot, but ultimately all of this comes from excess profits. So if you build up that profit part, you can call it seasonal part. You could rename it literally slow season part or whatever you want to call it. that's probably the aim where we want to get to over time.
Yeah. Well, the aim I want to get to is each of the pots has more money than I need every month, yeah. and then you build and then you build up a buffer on all of them. Especially, I mean, the big one really is cost of goods sold, and I mean, the one tweak I might still make is I might take salaries back out of operating expenses again. And I know it needs to be, and I understand the logic of why it needs to be in operating expenses.
Yeah.
But as I say, operating expenses, I think of as stuff that I can, those are choices.
Yeah.
I choose to pay rent, or I choose to, you know, drive a car. I don't choose to pay a salary. And then that's a fixed cost that has to be paid every month. So I'm tempted to take that one out just so that I know I've always got enough money in that pot to pay my salaries.
It's a really interesting topic. Firstly, if it makes sense for you to split it, no problem at all. We always start with less is more accounts normally. And there's a podiatrist I work with, and she separates the good sized business. She separates the payroll, the salaries from operating expenses. So she likes to do that. However, it's a little bit more the advanced side of profit first, and it might land with your business, it might not, and it depends on everybody's business. But I wouldn't rule out the mindset of salaries can be changed, or we can do something differently, because I've probably saved, I reckon, 50-60 grand a year in salaries. Because I've applied profit first to my salaries in my business, so we've innovated.
To operating expenses.
Yeah, so we keep it as part of operating expenses, but I do get why people split it, because it's such a big chunk. Most of the time, it's a big chunk of the cost. However, by having the mindset that it's not fixed, and generally, don't get me wrong, it is fixed for most people. I'm not suggesting people cut off team members. However, sometimes when your business is growing or your percentages are going in a certain direction, we look at it and say, if I hire that new team member, it's going to ruin my percentage. It's going to ruin my operating expenses. So the question I've often asked myself, and I've done it a couple of times in the last 5 years, is I've literally sat down with a pen and paper, and I call it thinking time. And I'm like, how could I go about this without hiring, without spending X on salaries? I'm normally talking new recruits, not letting people go, by the way. So if our revenue's going up, and with it could be AI, it could be subcontracting, it could be changing the structure. And I know this, you know, feedback's not for everyone, but it's later on, Profit First does sometimes force us to kind of innovate, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I understand the logic behind it for sure. Yeah. Keep trying it. I mean, I need to build up. Like I say, it'll all make a big difference next year. Once we've been paid for everything this year, and we've got a buffer in the pots, then I can see, I know I'm safe for a few months. And then I can see if that starts going down, then I can adjust accordingly. But yeah, that makes sense.
In terms of, and I think it's relevant for both of you guys, and I know you asked the question, Gary, anybody else who's going to end up listening or watching this, is about benchmarking against your industry or similar industries. And I think our podiatrist client really focused on benchmarking against her industry at the beginning. And I get it, because in the accounting industry, there's all different benchmarks thrown out there. You know, going back to 30 years ago, people used to talk about a third, a third, and a third. And we've all got our own benchmarks. And it was 33% staff costs, 33% overheads, 33% profit was the number years ago. And there's different numbers thrown around now. There's different targets for your gross profit. And I think where industries is really interesting is it often focuses a lot on your gross profit percentage, which is what Profit First doesn't focus on. So we've got a target gross profit percentage in our business driven from best practice in our industry. And if I didn't pay attention to that, Profit First has not given me any guidance, any insight on what to aim for. So I do think... we've got it. We track it. Yeah.
I look at the industry. I look at my, over the last few years, what my direct costs are.
Yeah, so. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it's not, the book doesn't really talk about gross profit percentage. They talk about what happens after, because gross, your margin is pretty much the same as real revenue for a lot of people in Profit First. So for example, let's say someone's £1 million business and they've got 500K worth of direct costs. So that the margin, the gross profit would be 500K. Okay, that's left. 500K would be left because 50% would be direct costs. In Profit First, they work with the 500K that's left. They call that Profit First. They call that real revenue. However, one of the downsides with Profit First is they don't really guide you to say, should the real revenue be higher? What if a better benchmark was to have 40% cost of goods sold and actually got 600K worth of real revenue? And I feel the book overlooks this, and where you can get these insights from is your industry. So I think it's quite healthy to benchmark some of those numbers in your industry. So for me, the moonshot where Tom is aiming for straight in a new business because he's got a clean slate, the moonshot is Profit First HQ benchmarks, you know, in the book. They are definitely the long term. But for a lot of people, including us, it's hard to go straight there into those numbers. We need to work towards them. So to help us get there, I think it's healthy to do a little bit of comparison and a little bit of modelling with similar businesses. However, obviously, we're both in the EC, Gary. Have you heard of Entrepreneur Circle, Tom, by any chance?
It rings a bell for some reason.
Yeah, I won't be preachy, but it's quite a good group, isn't it, Gary, with lots of business owners inside and over a couple of thousand business owners, lots of resources, and they're big fans of Profit First, actually. But the Entrepreneur Circle, Gary, particularly in their master plan, talk about the Blue Ocean Strategy. Is that something you've come across, Blue Ocean Strategy?
I did master plan, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. So really, why we don't want to get too obsessed with our industry is it's a red ocean, isn't it, most of the time, if you see what I mean? And just for anyone who's listening, watching, and for you, Tom, what they say is if you do everything your competitors are already doing, if you copy, not copy, but if we use the model, the same model everybody else is doing, we can become a little bit of a commodity. And they call it a red ocean because if you look in Cheltenham, where we're based, there's so many coffee shops. You know, all the sharks are after the same, you know, the same reward, essentially. So we want to create a pivot and create a blue ocean where what we're doing is very different, very unique. And you might be thinking, you know, Tom, in your business, sort of, it's plumbing, isn't it, you do, Tom?
Heating, yeah.
So you might, you know, but for some people, we might be thinking, well, it is what it is. You know, same with accounting. But it could be how we go about our business. If we can be so unique and so different. And the reason this is important is it links into our Profit First long-term targets, because we don't want to be limited by our competition. We want to use it to benchmark areas, Gary, of our business, which maybe people are doing better than us. I don't know how we'd get this information, but for example, if you've got competitors that are charging 20% more, we probably want to figure out, you know, what can we do to emulate that? But we want to take a balanced approach with not paying too much to the competition. Is that kind of helpful and makes a bit of sense, Gary?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's I mean, it's obviously we try. Our margins are good, like compared to our industry. Our gross margins are 11% above the industry. I mean, I track everything. I'm obsessed with spreadsheets, and we track every order, every margin, everything. And yeah, we do track against industry. The information that we have, we track against, and also when we lose orders, we work out what. And yes, so if it's because we were too expensive, we go back to the supplier and see how we can, you know, do things. So I'm fairly comfortable with that. I mean, I think where we can help our TAPs for my business is reducing our operating expenses. That's I find you take it all, you know, every percentage I save on choosable costs is probably not the right word, then I could add on to profit. It's good. I mean, we used to have our profit at 10%. which we had to really struggle to do it, but we made it work. And that was the one where sometimes you'd have to borrow, but yeah, but I believe in setting it high and then making the money work for you, yeah. Which is really good. I have brought it down now to some of the things I'm trying to, as I say, pump up all the pots a little bit and build a buffer. But once we've built that buffer, that will start going back up again, because I've worked out at 10%, I can max my pension every year, which is kind of my goal, where I want to be there. But yeah, that all makes sense. I do have to jump up to another call in 11 minutes, but I had one more question about the book. Was in the book, he says that we should be paying our purse, because my company tax is very low. My corporation tax is very low because we managed to write off a lot. My personal tax can be quite high. How he says, Mike says, that we should be paying our personal tax from our pension, from our tax pot.
Yeah, so the idea is, because it's all kind of funded through the business ultimately, isn't it, really? You know, because that's where we get our living from. So the idea is, if we can work towards 15% tax, and for some people, that might be 5%, it might be 7%. But if we could work closer towards that 15%, and because obviously you've been in business a few years, Gary, this is what I was saying to Tom earlier, knowing your numbers and what your tax bill usually is does help, looking at real average numbers. But the idea is, yeah, you're just setting enough aside in that pot to always cover the business tax and the personal tax, because ultimately it's all coming from the funds of the business.
And then does that get treated as a director's loan?
Yeah, so there is this kind of chicken and egg thing to this, because, and it's an interesting point, because whether we call it owner's pay, whether we call it profit in profit versus terms, and just for everyone watching or listening later on, that's extra money above and beyond paying yourself, whether we call it tax, those three things all come from accounting profit in the business, because if there's not profit, we can't split it. So this tax, when you take it out to pay your personal tax bill, is effectively part of your drawings from the business. And then, as you say, yeah, director's loan. And, you know, so it will probably end up being a dividend, because obviously most people have got their salary already, you know, about 12K per annum. And it's going to be a dividend. But, you know, we do extra tax planning often with people in conjunction with Profit First, just to make sure that coming at it from different angles, that they've got the whole picture. But obviously you're on top of your numbers, because I don't think everybody has a dashboard like you have in terms of the wealth and everything. So you're probably ahead of a lot of people on that side.
I've built it up over the years. And I give blank versions to people when they want to do it, and they start doing it, and then they just tweak it for themselves. So I think it works really well.
That's right, okay. We're about to wrap up anyway. So I appreciate you. Come in, then I'll see you soon, Gary.
I got your spreadsheet yesterday, so I'm going to work through that this weekend.
Yeah, perfect.
Have a good one.
Tom, before we wrap up, have you got any final questions or anything?
I think it's just inspired me to get back and listen to the book again. I think I might even buy a hard copy and read it as well. I think that'd be useful.
I think that's a good idea, actually, because I listen to a lot of books on Audible, but I also read. And what I've noticed is, Audible's good for digesting things on the first listen, but sometimes we kind of want, it's almost like a manual, isn't it, when you've got the book? So you can physically pick up a page and just kind of zoom in on that page and analyze it for 20 minutes. It's quite hard to do that when you're listening to something.
Yeah. I think just looking at my pots now, I've got allocated, and listening to you guys talking just now, it's made me realize I might need to add a couple of extra pots, I think.
Yeah. No, perfect. And there is a little bit of trial and error. You know, Gary's been at it for 4 years. We've been at it for a number of years. So you will kind of modify and tweak it over time. But yeah, thanks for bringing up the book suggestion, because I was going to, you know, recommend to anybody listening or watching, if you did give up on the first half of the book, it's probably worth going straight in and starting from the second half. Okay. Because the first half is easy. So if someone's already read it, I'd probably almost start backwards next time. Because we kind of lose the will, because most people running a business don't enjoy spending hours looking at the numbers. So we've probably got more energy to start that way around the second time through, I'd say.
Yeah, that's why I asked earlier, does Gary do his work, uh, his, accounts monthly or bi-weekly, and I'm currently doing them monthly just because I just don't want to look at the numbers. I'm sort of head in the sand at the minute, so I think I'll have to get it down to 2 weeks, I think.
That's what I'd probably suggest. If we were like, you know, we obviously work with a lot of people one-to-one, and the people we work to one-to-one with, we generally have quarterly sessions, and I'd probably be nudging you towards every 2 weeks. Like I said, some people I've known do it daily, but they don't stick with it for daily. They probably end up doing weekly. Some people do weekly, two weekly. But at the end of the day, it is working. So I try and, you know, not force it, do it in a way that works for you.
The main reason to go down, just do it every other week, would just be just so you're on top of everything, I guess. Is that the main sort of thrusting?
Yeah. Well, I think most people can't afford to wait a month to kind of split the money into pots.
Yeah.
So most people, because it means you go in a month with the money in your main account not being allocated, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So if you do it weekly or two weekly, you've got a clearer picture kind of where you are with all your pots, really. It's like a dashboard, essentially, in your pots.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Thanks, Tom. Well, good to catch up anyway. And thanks everybody else who's watched it or listened to it back.
Yeah.
But reach out to me or the team, Tom, if you've got any other questions later on.
Oh, lovely. Cheers, Stephen.
Cheers.
Bye.
See ya.
Excuses. See you right now. So...